Morning, everyone. Wednesday, June 22, the Big Sports Breakfast on Sky Sports Radio. Pup, you're back. You're back as the Aussies.
Oh, dear.
Go down 3-1 in the one-day series against Sri Lanka overnight, a four-run defeat. Ugh. And we looked to be cruising. At one point, we needed 70 from 86 balls with six wickets in hand, and then their spinners just got the better of us, and in the end, we've fallen four short. Morning to you.
Yeah, morning, boys. I think I should have stayed at home today after my comments about Sri Lanka. No chance of winning one game against the Aussies in this series in any format. But congratulations to them. Yeah, they won't be happy, Australia. And again, we see that we've got a problem against spin bowling. I'm a little confused as to why Finchie won the toss and wanted to chase, seeing the wickets have been turning. I think Sri Lanka picked four spinners, so it was obviously their tactic. Generally, when conditions are like that, you want runs on the board and you want to bat when it's spinning its least. So the wicket, even in a one-dayer with footmarks and you know, a used wicket, you think the wicket's going to spin more batting second. So interested to hear why he made that decision. But yeah, take nothing away from Sri Lanka. They've picked the team in those conditions that it is spin to win. It's as simple as that. And now I worry about what Australia's going to think come these test matches. Are they going to think, let's do the same, let's pick three spinners? I don't think we need to. I don't think that's our way. I think the key is to utilise Nathan Lyon and Swepson if he's the second spinner and bowl them at the right times and from the right ends with the right fields. And then the key is going to be how we bat, how we face spin. David Warner, exceptional last night. Unfortunate to miss out on his 100, but a good innings. And he needed some runs as well, Dave. He hadn't been scoring many runs. But, yeah, just that collapse through the middle once again. Not good enough, Mido, unfortunately. And it's a big loss. We should be dominating Sri Lanka, not beating them. We should be dominating them in any conditions around the world. But it's the game. Congrats to Sri Lanka. They were awesome and deserve to win.
Loza, morning to you. Rip round tonight at Belmore, Lebanon, Malta. Kick it off.
Yeah, I see that, Mido, in the Elias Fenwick Cup.
That is what it's called,
That's what
it?
It's called, yeah. Yeah.
Saw them hugging the other day. Yeah. Who would have thought those two would be hugging each other?
I know. They've had a long-standing rivalry and feud for such a long time. But that's good that they're
awesome.
Back talking. I see Michael Checker won't be there at the game because he's had to fly over to Argentina to get ready for a game that he's coaching for rugby union. Mm. So flight was changed, so he had to go overseas. But, yeah, I'll be intrigued to see, you know, how both these nations go. Obviously, it's a warm-up for Lebanon for the World Cup. If all their players available, Lebanon, there's a lot of Lebanese players or players that are eligible to play for Lebanon at the end of the year in the World Cup. They'll come up with a decent footy side. But tonight at Belmore Oval, if you're looking for a game of footy, get out there and have a look at Lebanon play against Malta.
It's amazing, Michael Checker, isn't it, to think that he's going to be coaching in two World Cups within 12 months in two different codes.
Yeah.
He's now the head coach of Argentina in rugby, and here he is about to coach Lebanon in a World Cup later this year. That's it. I'm sure that'd have to be a first.
Oh, I can't think of too many other people that have been able to
coach.
Do that as a head coach, two different sports within the space of 12 months. But well done to him. And I think, you know, you can transfer your skills. I see he's got, you know, Matt King from the Roosters helping him, you know, Robbie Farah. So technically, all bases will be covered. But, you know, check there as the man manager in this squad. I think it'll be a good thing.
Okay, some spice heading into Game 2 of Origin after we're all really nice to each other heading into Game 1. And I'll get to one back page early this morning, back page of the Courier Mail. Apparently Liam Martin's the grub now, according to the Queenslanders. Looking for a blue, the headline, Mad Martin is now Maroon's number one or enemy number one. So they've found four incidents between the 64th and 68th minute of Game 1. Oh, seriously, this is, I mean, we've seen this before. So the Courier-Mail's targeting him, saying he's the new villain. Apparently went on a, quote, grubby rampage. And so I just want to put the pressure on, I guess, with the talk that Brad Fittler has, you know, spoken to Jared Maxwell about some things that he believes that Ashley Klein missed in game one. By the way, Ashley Klein's been appointed again for game two. The Queenslanders and their cheerleaders, I suppose, just making sure that the referee's aware of some other stuff that they perceive to have happened. Is it, Loz, you were a part of it. These are the games that are played.
Just tit for tat, Mido. You're trying to come up with a little bit of an advantage, try and make the referee aware of what's going on from the opposition perspective. But I think at the end of the day, the referees don't read the papers. They're not going to be influenced by what New South Wales say or what Queensland say. They'll go out there and referee to the best of their ability. They'll try and make it as limit the amount of penalties they have to give. But sometimes they will give penalties in an Origin game if it starts to become, you know, too slow at the ruck, if players are standing offside, if they're, you know, causing foul play. So the referees will just react to what the players do. In that first game, I thought it was a terrific contest. I thought it was very fast. I thought it was very open. New South Wales, I thought, lost their way at times during that game, and Queensland just hung in. And as Queensland do, a lot of their brilliance comes off one or two individuals creating something. You know, a line break or a Munster line break or a Ponga going down a short side. Whereas New South Wales, when you watch them play, and they've been very good at it, it's all sort of set pieces. It's all that sort of block plays and Penrith style coming out in the New South Wales team. But they just didn't have their rhythm up in game one. So they've changed the team, and we'll see whether they can get their game plan on Sunday night.
Some other sports news overnight elsewhere in golf. It's not an exodus yet, but the trickle is getting faster. World number 19, Brooks Koepka, four-time major winner.
No, surely not.
He's off to the LIV Tour.
Surely not.
The PGA Tour, by the way, it looks like they're going to respond and increase purses, etc. So we'll speak to Dick Fain, actually, later this morning. This morning, a bit of a change in the times, by the way. Bulldog, because he's Perth-bound. He's going to join us, I think, just before he catches his flight, just after 6 o'clock in about 20-odd minutes time, 25 minutes time. Dean Bulldog Richie, and we'll have Dick Fain later this morning, about 20 to 7. But Brooks Koepka, he's off. And so is the world number 20, the Mexican Abraham Anser. They've gone to the LIV Tour.
Well, I think we forecast this, that money will do a lot of talking when it comes to golf. And if you've got big, deep pockets, then eventually those players will make their way across to that tour. Not everyone will do it, but you'll have some of the world's best golfers in that tour. They need to come together. They need to sort out what the program looks like, and they need to incorporate, I suppose, some of these events on the PGA or into the PGA going forward.
And also in the NFL, Loz, after 11 seasons, 4 Super Bowls, Rob Gronkowski is retiring this for the second time. So Tom Brady won't have his big sidekick there for his third season or a third season there in Tampa Bay. But one of the most popular players, Gronkowski, and certainly he and Brady have formed one of the great quarterback tight end combinations. Probably the greatest, in fact, in
Batman
NFL history.
Batman and Robin, weren't they? Yeah. They were just hand in hand. Everything that Brady did, Gronkowski was there alongside him. And he was instrumental in getting him to go and play with the Tampa Bay side when he obviously retired from New England. So, he's been a wonderful player, Gronkowski. It won't be the end of him either in terms of seeing him on the box, because I'd say he'd have a career either as an actor or a commentator or a feature in a lot of advertising for companies well into the future, because he's a massive name over there.
Now, already on the text line, Clark, and I guess this was always going to happen when the defeats came. People weren't happy about Justin Langer and the way he left as Australian coach. And Brett from Richmond says, Clark, is this a sign of a soft coach? Soft underbelly in the team. And another one, great move getting rid of JL, as long as the team's happy, says Fitzy.
Oh, my God.
Well, this was always going to happen.
Yeah, and you can understand why people are going to say, well, look, the truth is, and again, you have to be careful because you need to pay credit to the team that wins, right? And Sri Lanka deserve all the credit in the world. They produced pitches that they knew were going to spin, but their execution was great. Their spinners did well. Their batters made hundreds. So congratulations to Sri Lanka winning this one-day series. But no disrespect, Australia should be dominating Sri Lanka. So guess what? They're going to cop criticism. I don't care what conditions they play in. I don't care what spinners. They're not facing Murali. They're not facing Warney. Australian batsmen should be able to score enough runs against these spinners to win one-day games. And if they can't, how are they going to go into test match on days 3, 4, 5? Mm-hmm. Because if you're Sri Lanka now, you're saying, mate, I want it spinning on day one. Just that's our only chance of beating the Aussies.
Yep.
So I think the criticism that comes now, unfortunately for the players, they deserve it. But again, I don't want to be hard on Finchie. It's questionable. Why? I want to know why he thought batting second, chasing, was the way forward. If you knew it was going to turn, you saw their team sheet. You see they got four spinners in their team before you toss the coin. That's telling you what the wicket's going to be like. Mm. I don't know how he thought it was going to be easier batting second than batting first. Unless maybe there was some dew he was thinking. I don't know, but I think that was a big core. To want to chase when you know it's going to spin so big, and we've struggled against spin bowling. So I think the major concern is, yeah, we still struggle facing spin bowling as a batting unit, and we have done for a long time. And that's what makes playing in the subcontinent extremely hard. That's why there will still be questions about can we beat India in India, because we know the wickets are going to spin. So yeah, the boys should be disappointed. I'm sure they are. And I'm sure they'll accept that they're going to be criticised. But yeah, I'd like to think that, I don't know, this is just my take as well. I'd like to think the coach hasn't got anything to do with it. I don't think the soft underbelly can come in 5 seconds either. Right? You can't go from being a good team or a tough team to losing that in 1-2. And we just won the 2020s as well. So won the 2020s, lost the one days. Let's see how the test series goes.
It's just that we can't play spin.
Well,
don't play spin. I reckon he should have batted first.
Yeah,
he should have taken advantage of that.
We're not getting better, Loz, against spin. I think that's like I go back to when I played. We still at times certainly in the subcontinent we really struggled against spin. The centre of excellence in Brisbane tried to produce a practice facility that allowed you to learn against. But
what happened to Marnus's little venture?
The thing on his balcony?
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't
work.
That's right. Didn't work. Know what you're talking about for a second. That's
the map with the spinning.
It's getting a little
pitch.
Bit funky, aren't we?
Yeah. But we batted down to, what, 8 or 9? Cameron Green came in at 8.
Man, Paddy Cummins got, didn't Paddy get 35?
Well, Paddy came in at 9.
You know what I mean? So
Matt Kuhneman nearly won us the game. Yeah. He hit 3 fours in the last over. Yeah. He needed 19 off the last over. He got us within a shot.
I don't think anybody... Again, Davey got 99. I think we got 100 in the one-day series, did we? I don't think a batsman got 100 in the one-day series.
No, I think you're right.
And that's generally how the Australian team sets up its foundation. Mm. One player sort of sets the foundation and goes on and makes 100, which allows the other boys, especially with this current Australian team, so much power to sort of bat around him.
Yep.
So maybe that's the, miss Steve Smith with that quad strain as well. That's been Smitty for a long time, that he's been the one to go on and make a big score. And then you got the likes of Finch, Maxwell, Warner that can come in and smack it around him. So, yeah, I think we obviously need to improve against spin. And when blokes get in, you've got to go on and make 100. That'll be the key in the test matches as well. Mm. If we get starts, we won't win. If blokes get in and can go on, because it's hard to start when the ball's turning like that, it's very hard to start your innings. Those first 10 runs are so difficult. So if somebody gets out in their first 10 runs, you sort of go, it's okay, that's the way the game goes. But the bloke that gets in and gets 50, 60... he needs to go on because he's used to the pitch conditions. Mm. He's used to the turn. He's used to the inconsistency. He needs to adapt and continue to concentrate and go on and make a really big score.
It's only a little thing, but is your anchor player, that Steve Smith, Marnus type role, should he be 3 or 4?
I don't think it matters. I don't think it matters too much. No, it depends on the other batsmen that you got around them. Again, I know they're using Mitchell Marsh in the one-dayers at number 3. In the 2020s at number 3, and I can understand that because he needs a little bit of time to get in, but he's got amazing power. I don't know if Mitch Marsh is still our number 3 in in one day cricket. Yeah. I think you probably would go to Smitty as your number three. And then the question is, can you have Smith and Marnus in the same one day team? I don't think you can in 2020, but in one day cricket, I still think there's a role for the number three and number four to be your foundation, particularly when you look through the Australian order. If you've got Warner Finch, power, aggressive. You got Maxwell, power, aggressive. You got someone like a Stoinis, for example, when he's fit as well. But looking at this team here, I think there's, you know, Alex Carey batting where, why is Alex Carey batting in front of Travis Head as well? Travis Head just made 70-odd, didn't he? You know, I just some questions. You know, Glenn Maxwell, why is he coming so low? They've obviously gone for left, right hand as well with sending Alex Carey up the order. They probably thought he's a good sweeper. You know, he's probably batting with Marnus, left, right hand combination. But again, if you need to do that, that's another reason where more importantly than a left, right hand combination is bat first. Don't bat second when conditions are going to be even tougher to face spin.
And as Lenny says on the text line, people conveniently forget the Aussies won the tests and one day is in Pakistan. They'll be fine in the tests in Sri Lanka.
Yeah, Pakistan didn't spin one bit. Pakistan was Pakistan was an absolute belter.
It was the Peshawar Highway.
Yeah, you can't compare Pakistan wickets to what they're facing now in Sri Lanka or what we faced in India in the last series. It very, very different.
Headlines are next. And just on that back page of the Courier Mail, Buck from Gunnedah's text in, morning boys, how can they label Martin a grub when they have Kafusi and Munster, not to mention Gagai? Have a sook, Queensland, go New South Wales, says Buck from Gunnedah. And yes, if you're just tuning in, the back page of the Courier Mail, looking for a blue, the headline, Mad Martin is now Maroon's enemy number one, and the Courier Mail highlighting four incidents they perceived to be, quote, a grubby rampage that Liam Martin apparently went on in Origin 1. Oh, please. We see all those incidents a million times, you could say, in every game. Now, on the back pages dominating the papers today is, the headlines are, firstly, on the back page of The Australian, league boss, we're not copying FINA. Back page of The Herald, Perkins, that's Kieran Perkins, fears transgender carnage at amateur level. The Telegraph, don't make us hide. Former transgender league star blasts international ban. So the International Rugby League, and Troy Grant is the former state minister, is the chairman of that body. So they've followed FINA, essentially, the swimming governing body, and they've banned transgender players from playing in sanctioned International Rugby League matches until further research is completed. And naturally, there are organisations and individuals outraged. Issues don't get much more complex than this.
No, and it's very sensitive, Mindo, because all sports want to be inclusive. But at the end of the day, you have to go with the science. And if the science comes back and says it's an unfair advantage for transgender to compete, in particular if you've gone from male to female and you're competing against females, if the science says that's an unfair advantage, I think it's the correct decision.
Mm. Is it because of testosterone in the system as a male compared to a female?
I think it's after been through puberty and then changed.
Yeah, okay.
I think that's where you get your unfair advantage. Mm. So,
and then integrity of sport comes under question, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, it does. Because
I'm not talking integrity. The actual integrity of competition.
Yeah, but again, you know, the science and people that look into this type of stuff, if they're saying it's an unfair advantage, you can't have women competing against the transgender women if they've got an unfair advantage. Mm. It's just like if someone's been taking extra levels of testosterone, or if they're taking steroids or whatever it may be, if you're competing and it's unfair and you're disadvantaging the group that's supposed to be competing, well, you can't do it. Mm. You can't do it. FINA are allowing now competition for transgender, and, you know, I think that's great as well. But again, all sports want to be inclusive. They don't want to hurt anyone.
Are there enough transgendered players to, again, it's okay to say we're going to set up a competition, but is there enough people to compete?
Not at this stage, but they're only talking at the highest level at the moment.
They're only talking at the highest level.
They're not talking at community levels.
They're
talking at international swimming meets
and
at international rugby league.
Yeah, rugby league said the same thing. Yeah, I understand. Yeah, okay.
Also, back page of the telly, there's a picture of Stephen Crichton, the Blues centre. No glove lost as Critter prepares for Origin Stoush, and basically New South Wales have conceded. Well, a quote here, Brandy is right, and Greg Alexander made those comments a couple of nights ago that they were too nice in Origin 1, and Junior Paolo in this article saying, well, essentially, yes, Brandy was right, and the Blues looking to find some mongrel for game two.
One thing they don't want to do is give away penalties and be ill-disciplined. You don't want to be ill-disciplined in this game. And all the talk has been about, oh, we're too nice. Well, if they get too angry and they lose their head and they don't play with any control and they start blaming the referee and then lose their way and lose their focus on the job they have to do, that'll be a concern. Because they won't be winning the game if they play like that.
Yeah, and Angus Crichton in the back page of the Herald, blue touch paper, the headline there. And, well, he wasn't happy with Felice Kafusi's elbow on Sam Walker. So he's made some comments about that. So the Blues just starting to talk a bit, aren't they, about just getting a little bit agitated.
Well, you know what? Don't worry about talking. Do it.
My God.
I don't know whether they're taking a leaf out of Kenny's book and wanting the hype to be there, but the hype's got to be real. You can't just manufacture hype. You've got to get out there and you've got to show people how much it means to you pulling on that Blues jersey. You've got to show, you know, how you won't be stood over. You've got to show people how aggressive you will be by being strong in defence and strong when you carry the football. You know, there's no point talking about it because you've got to do it. And once you do it, then you take confidence out of that. And I'm expecting New South Wales to be strong. I'm expecting them to be at their best. I reckon it's a better balanced team. But Queensland will be improved as well.
Tell you what, a couple of Nostradamus in here. Who was it out of you two said Benji would win Celebrity Apprentice?
Who do you think?
Loza did.
But it didn't. Hang on a second.
Hang on a second. He didn't guess it. He goes and works at Fox and sees them all. Sees all the boys there. Sees Benji. It would have been shot 6 months ago.
Let's not,
you know, make it out like he went to sleep and he had a dream.
Benji didn't tell me.
I didn't say Benji told you. Oh, please.
I just had a solid feeling.
What about who I guessed won? He ended up in hospital.
Yeah, that'd be the final, though.
Yeah.
He ended up in the... Is he okay?
He's fine, yeah.
He's fine now.
Yeah. Well done, Benji.
Well done, Bench.
Yeah.
Do we know if your horse is definitely going to run on Saturday yet?
I don't know anything. No, I wouldn't have a clue.
We'll track that.
No pretty, emails.
Pretty
no.
Wild. Nommed for Saturday at Royal Randwick. Now, the other story I just wanted to mention, fellas, we've got Dean Bulldog, Richie joining us from the airport shortly. But on the back page of The Australian, Jackson's stunning Opals comeback dream now closer. 41-year-old Lauren Jackson is set to join a national team camp in Canberra next week. She hasn't played for the Opals since 2013. She's been playing for her home team, Albury Wodonga. She says she didn't think she'd get to this point. She had various markers she had to reach since she basically recommitted to the sport about last November. And they start their World Cup campaign, the Opals, against France in Sydney, September 22. But it looks like we're going to have, provided all going well with the fitness, she's been averaging 32 points in that team that she's come back and played with, still at her age, by far the best player.
What a story, eh?
How good.
Unbelievable. Oh,
that's
so good.
It is. I mean, you talk about averaging 32 points, close to 12 rebounds a game as well. But she's had markers all the way through it to try and get back into that squad. And she's had to pass all those little tests she's put in front of herself, along with the fitness staff from the basketball team, from the Opals. So she's got there on her performances, and she's got there on her fitness, and she's got there on a competitive drive. So this is one of the greatest comebacks in any sport.
Yeah.
let alone Australian sport.
Yeah. She comes back and dominates that tournament. That is one of the stunning
she's
comebacks.
She's got that size, the height, and hard to get those type of players. And if she can come back and just play a role for this Opals team, she will certainly help them. There's no doubt about that. The friends of the show, Dean Bulldog Richie, is joining us. I want to know, Dean, are you mask on or mask off?
I'm mask off at the moment, Loz. I don't need to put her on at the airport just yet, but I do believe that on a flight you have to whack it back on again. So that'll be 5 hours worth of discomfort. But rules are rules.
Just put a packet of peanuts in front of you the whole time, Bulldog.
just keep
eating. Stick a bottle of water in front of you for 5 hours.
Yeah, I can eat too, Clarky, so I could put it for 5 hours.
Oh, dear.
How's the chaos there at the airport? You got all the breakfast news programs asking you for a grab or two, Bulldog?
Well, it's funny, Mido. I thought, you know what? I wanted to make sure I was through security and bag drop-off before you guys rang. So I got up really early and got out here, but I was through in about 3 minutes. So I've been wandering around for the last 45 minutes having a cup of coffee, but certainly when I got here, it would have been, say, 5:30, 5:45, there was nobody here at all. So, look, we're out there right now. It's become a bit of a dogfight. I don't know, but certainly, 45 minutes ago, it was very quiet. Mm.
Is Philip Buzz Rothfield going over to Perth, or is he working from the Cronulla Bureau?
No, I think he'll be at the Cronulla Bureau. He's still most upset at what you said to him last week, Laurie. Do you recall?
I can't, no. Remind me.
Well, for those that don't know, Laurie and I did catch up for quite a beer last Friday.
Oh, did I say something? Did we ring him, did we?
Quite
beer. We FaceTimed him, and you said, OMG, Phil, how red are your cheeks?
They were, though. I've forgotten all about that.
They were, yeah. He's claimed that generally you see him in the green room at Fox,
yep.
And he's caked in makeup, and that was just raw Phil.
Right.
Yeah.
What did you make of his cheeks, by the way?
You could have cooked an egg on them.
Mate, they were that red. I couldn't believe it, Bulldog. But anyway, he's a great mate of ours, Buzz. I'd forgotten all about that phone call.
It's a pretty cruel comment, Laurie. You probably should make a public apology.
I apologise, Phil.
What do you say? He got red cheeks. I reckon he's had worse than that said to him, Buzz.
Yeah, I reckon he would have.
Probably from me.
And by you, Clark.
Straight to his face.
What time did we ring him, by the way?
4:15.
What's late, Loz? Those questions are a little bit difficult for me to answer.
Sounds like a quiet drink. What are you expecting as far as this build-up's concerned? Looks like there's a bit more spice already leading into this Origin than the last.
Yeah, I hope so, Mido. I said before, and it sounds like I'm saying this purely because I'm a journalist, but yeah, we need spice in State of Origin. That's what makes it what it is. If we don't have that argy-bargy among the states, and if we have these quiet, timid PC build-ups, it loses its chaos, if you know what I mean. And it becomes just a glorified club game, which is a very sterile build-up. And I think the pre-game argy-bargy, I guess you could say, Mido, that's what makes Origin. That's what stands it above the rest when it comes to rugby league. And I think if we lose that in time, and we certainly have in the last few years, I think if we lose that, we lose a big part of what the game is all about. And I know it's all about on-field, I get that, but I still think off-field, that's where it generates its interest, that's where it generates its hatred, and that's what really gets the fans pumped up in terms of preparing for the big game. And I just think in the last couple of years, it's gone very quiet. Both coaches don't want to give anything away. I get that. Laurie, you've been in the same situation. You have that mentality of not wanting to give the opposition any ammunition. Having said that, I think if it continues down that path, it will become a very benign build-up, and we don't want that.
Mm. Clark and I and Mido, we've all got different opinions on this second State of Origin team and how it's been selected. Where do you stand? What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I like the look of it, Loz. I think it's a more complete side than game one. I'm a little bit surprised the accusations at Brandy and Freddie for quote-unquote panicking. I don't know whether coaches panic when they lose. I think it's just a matter of, certainly from my point of view, if you lose, well, then you go out and try to find a side that you think can win. Whether that's panicking, I guess, is up to the individual. But I just think Freddie wanted to pick a side that could win. It sounds very simplistic, but it's true. He's fighting to save the series, and there are a few players there which he's discarded. It's very difficult. I feel a bit for Ryan Madison. I feel a bit for Katoni Staggs to be given debuts and then one game into their Origin careers to have it taken away. But, look, that's the brutality of Origin. It's a ruthless business. Loz, you know that better than anybody. Hard decisions have to be made, and we lose, the series is gone. And then that's, you know, that's embarrassing for New South Wales. But I think changes had to be made, and Freddie has made them. Whether they're the right ones, I guess we can discuss that at about 10 o'clock on Sunday evening.
Yeah. Do you think they got it wrong, Bulldog, in regards to selection for Game 1? Because, again, I think a lot of experts are saying the squad looks a better squad for Game 2 than it did for Game 1. And in that, do you feel we are trying to be too much like Queensland or trying to, you know, combat what they're doing more than us actually going out and doing what's best for New South Wales?
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree with we got it wrong, Clarkie.
Yep.
I ask you this. If we go into the first test at Laws and we pick an 11 that doesn't win,
yep,
and you make a couple of changes, do you front up in the second test and say we got it wrong?
Well, I don't think we would make 7 changes. That's my, and again, cricket, very different, but I don't think we would make 4 changes. I think in my sport, you would stick, unless there was injuries, you would stick with the same squad. If you've picked the team for the first test, and we probably do that a lot, you see normally with cricket, the teams pick for at least the first 2 test matches of a 4 test series or a 5 test series to give the players every opportunity and to allow them to feel as comfortable as they can, knowing if I get one duck, well, I'm going to be dropped. But as I said yesterday, that's only my take from playing cricket. It's obviously very different in rugby league. And State of Origin, you know, you've only got 3 games. Or in New South Wales' case, they've only got this game now. So if you try and be loyal and stick fast, but it's you get it wrong, then the series is over, I guess.
Yeah, let's not forget, too, that with cricket, and I love my cricket, Clarkie, you know that, but yep, there's a lot more blokes banging on the door for selection in rugby league, given
of course
the pool of players is a lot bigger than the pool of potential cricket players. Having said that, look, yeah, I think Freddie picked the side he thought was going to win. I mean, Laurie, I'll bring you in here. You've been in this position before. You've lost a game and you've had to make changes. I mean, whether you got it wrong that first time, whether you're panicking for the second time, you know, they're words we use in the media, and that's fine. I've got no beef with that. But I just think it's a matter of you've got to pick the side that can win. That side in Game 1, it didn't win. It didn't win. And now we're under excruciating pressure to level a series. And you know, changes had to be made, and they've made them.
Hmm. Does it look too much like a Penrith side?
Potentially. I wrote a piece on the back page yesterday saying that, you know, they've turned to this Penrith connection. But, Loz, it's hard to go past what Penrith have done. They're that dominant. And I know it's a step up and State of Origin is a different beast to the NRL. But, you know, what if they want to pick a ton of Penrith players? They're not going to get any criticism from me given the form that those Penrith players are in. And the extraordinary thing about the Panthers, Loz, is that those blokes have been in form, in inverted commas, for 2.5 years now. And it's a very strange phenomenon because a lot of players go in and out of form once or twice during the year, but those blokes seem to have been at the peak of their powers now, you know, since 2020. So, look, they're hardened, they've played in grand finals, a lot of them have played a lot of Origin football now. So, look, if we want to go with the Penrith connection and the Penrith combinations, I've certainly got no problem with that at all.
With all the talk,
the Broncos used to pick 11 players when they were at their peak.
With all the talk about, you know, New South Wales being too nice and, you know, we need to win the ruck, and Queensland won that fairly and squarely, or, you know, pushed the boundaries a little bit in Game 1. If we're expecting this game with all the talk, that's going to be a dominant feature in this game and there's going to be, you know, a slower game and possibly more penalties than what there were in game one, because you want an open game. You don't want them to be lying on the tackle player too long. Do you see this turning into a real slugfest? And if that's the case, doesn't that suit Queensland a bit more than us?
Yeah, I agree. 100% more. I don't want it to be a slugfest. I quite enjoyed game one. I thought the actual standard was incredibly high. Queensland probably got away with a few things that we didn't. But part of coaching was, and again, you're the man, not me, but that's adjusting on the run. A lot of coaches you speak to, you say, look, you know, we go in with a game plan, but 20 minutes into the game, or 40 minutes into the game, we change. We watch and we look what the opposition's doing. And coaches think that's half the fun of coaching, is actually trying to adjust on the run and trying to outwit your opponent during the game. And we just didn't do that. And I guess Freddie blames himself for that, and maybe that's a fair cop. But the players also have to learn to read the game. And I guess, look, in the end, but you know, they got away with it. We didn't go to that area. And when Brandy says, I think we've got to get more ruthless, I don't think he means in the terms of, you know, aggression or physicality. I think he just means we've got to get more down and dirty in terms of the ruck and the rules.
Because I think a fast game suits us. I think if you want a stop-start game, I think it just plays into Queensland's hands. That's all I'm saying. I'm saying if both teams are allowed to get away with a little bit more and it slows it right down, that's what Queensland love.
See, I didn't mind the ref putting his whistle away. I thought actually...
Yeah, I agree.
I thought that was great. I thought he refereed well.
Yeah.
But again, when you're a coach, when you're looking at it a lot more closely, you notice a lot more things. And they would have noticed a lot of things in game one when they analysed at New South Wales.
I think it's sort of old school, wasn't it? I mean, we just had that with Bill Harrigan. The rules that are 50-50 tend to be overlooked, whether that's right or wrong. And whether that confuses the players on the field who play under a certain set of rules at NRL level and it changes. But again, I go back to saying that's a matter of readjusting your thinking on the field as you go, and you've got to learn to read what the referee's doing and make those adjustments.
Yeah, as long as the ruck's not too slow, I actually... And again, Bulldog, you see it in finals. I thought last year's final series were refereed great compared to how the games were refereed during the year. And I don't know. When they referee like that, to me, you get a genuine contest. You get good games. Sometimes when they nitpick for penalties, it just turns it into a you-know-what.
Why can't they referee like that all year then? That's the question.
I don't know.
You've been saying the exact same thing.
I enjoy, the bigger the game, usually the better the referee performs. Yeah. And they just not turn a blind
eye.
It's
but like they do get told, you know what, I reckon when they get a big game, they say, my job is to not be noticed. My job is to actually stay out of the game. But why don't they do that every single NRL game? Why only at Origin? Oh, well, why only a grand final?
They stop the game for everything. Whereas the big games, they just let it go, let it flow. And the best team usually wins.
Yeah. And it evens itself up.
Clarkie.
Say again, Bulldog?
With Origin, Clarkie, this is going nationally to three and a half million people. You want that game to be a game that appeals to the fans. And I'm not suggesting that anyone interferes and says, do this or don't do that. But they're the games you want to be your showpiece. A game going all around Australia and going to New Zealand and going through Europe and England, whoever watches it in those nations, and having this stop-start, laying all over the ruck, slugfest, it's a bit like, I heard about this State of Origin, let's turn it off. You want those big events to be played at breakneck speed and with physicality, but a clean ruck.
Yeah, well, I loved it. I thought the referees did a good job. And again, I'm not looking as closely as Brad Fittler is, but I as a spectator, I loved the first Origin. I thought it was an awesome game of footy. And you could see blokes were that cooked after 15
fatigued.
Minutes.
Yes.
So fatigued.
Well, Josh Papali'i
which brings everyone into the game
early,
as well. Yeah. Even like the smaller blokes, the quick bloke, like everybody comes into the game then.
Bulldog, the West Tigers, what's going on with them and Luke Brooks?
I rang Tim Sheens yesterday, Mido, and I didn't ring him about Luke Brooks, to be fair. I rang him about some speculation which came across my desk that they were about to sign Nathan Brown from Parramatta for the rest of this year and next year. It turns out that my mail wasn't great, and I rang Sheens and he said, look, there's some interest in Nathan Brown. He's played at the Tigers before, but they won't be making any decision on any major recruitment until they get their coach in place. So having asked him that, he bowled straight into the Luke Brooks situation. I didn't really even ask him, but he clearly wanted to get it off his chest. But look, he's claiming, despite some reports that they're saying Brooks will be dropped, that no decision has been made on Luke Brooks. They're not playing this week. They will train this week. They will see what happens in the rep round in terms of any possible injuries and maybe suspensions, and they will pick the side next Tuesday, as they always do. So at this point in time, there's been no decision made on Luke Brooks. He hasn't been dropped at this point. I did say to Tim Sheen, yeah, he hasn't been dropped, but will he? And he said, look, that's Brett Kamali's decision. Noddy makes the calls now in terms of who's in and who's out of the side. I also brought up Alex Twile. He has to visit a specialist later this week. Of course, badly concussed again on the weekend against the Bulldogs. And albeit we didn't want to jump to any conclusions about how long he's out for before he visits that specialist, Mido. But I get the feeling, speaking to Sheensy, that he might not play again for a while. I think there'll be a recommendation that, you know, Alex Twall may not play again for another 10 to 12 weeks. That would rule him out for the rest of the season. As much as that would hurt the Tigers on the field, he's had a couple of concussions before. He's a really terrific young bloke, Alex Twall, and I think that the Tigers will err on the side of caution and consider his welfare before results. I just, at this point, have a gut feeling we won't see Alex Twall again this season.
What about this story you've got in the paper today about a lot of these Origin players are able to talk to clubs in November of this year?
Yeah, it's amazing, Laws. In this one single game, there'll be 15 players, 15, who will be able to talk to rival clubs from November 1. So, look, that's not to say all 15 will be available on November 1. I'm sure a lot of them will be nailed down, but it's a fire sale that could reach up to $10 million because there's a lot of star power going on the open market. Well, not on the open market, Laws, but they are, from November 1, allowed to talk officially to rival clubs. But it's the biggest names in the game, and no doubt if they perform on Sunday night, their value will go up even further. So I know certain clubs have got money. They're monitoring the situation very closely as to who they can and will target. So it's a watch this space, but certainly in terms of one game, I've never before known that 15 players will be available. One of the key ones, of course, being Angus Crichton, because Angus is actually off this year. So he is actually a free agent in a few weeks' time. West Tigers, Parramatta have been linked to Angus Crichton. I was told yesterday Melbourne Storm. I rang the Storm, they denied it, but I reckon Melbourne Storm may or may not have a crack in right now, but in the future, I think they'll come into the equation. So, interesting story, Loz, about the biggest names in the game and where they may or may not end up in the next year or two.
Are you on the red eye home on Sunday night, or you get to stay over there and relax for a couple of days after having an arduous tour?
I'm actually on a 6:45 flight out, which I'd almost rather the red eye, I think, Loz, just get straight to the airport and get home, but it'll be a great game. I was at Optus Stadium in, I think it was 19 for an Origin game, or 18, and it was a wonderful atmosphere. It's an incredible stadium over there, and Perth was really jumping, so I'm expecting the same.
Just on that then, Bulldog, when you were over there before, what was the atmosphere at the ground was good, and granted, because it's a fantastic stadium, it was new and, you know, plenty of people there, but what's the sort of vibe around with rugby league? What was it like there, and what are you expecting this time around?
Yeah, the vibe was good, Loz. There was certainly a lot of colour. I remember seeing a lot of blue and maroon just walking down the main sort of corso in Perth. Look, whether they're locals who are getting into the rugby league and state of origin spirit, or whether they were, East Coast residents who have flown across to cheer on their state, you know, I don't know. But certainly there was a lot of colour in the air. There's a lot of excitement. And from memory, Loz, it was an amazing atmosphere at the ground, but then it started to bucket down rain all about 25 minutes into the game, and a lot of fans scattered up into the bleachers or undercover or even left the ground. So it put a little bit of a damper on the night through no one's fault other than the weather, but certainly the stadium over there, Loz, it's special, and I'm expecting a lot of colour again, and it'll be interesting because there's talk about rugby league and Perth and 18th franchise, and you know, these are the kind of situations and moments where, you know, hierarchy of the game tend to go and have a look around and see what interest is there. So, you know, is it the way to go in the future, Perth? I guess we'll find out. But, yeah, I'm expecting it to be a great night yet again, Lord.
Safe travels, Bulldog.
Thanks, boys. Have a great day.
Sri Lanka have beaten the Aussies by 4 runs in the 4th one-day international overnight. So that means they've clinched the series with a game to play. 3-1 Sri Lanka leads after they were bowled out for a 258 with an over to spare. And Australia in response, Dave Warner, 99. He was stumped. And, well, in the end, their last wicket fell right on the last ball. They were rolled for 254, so a 4-run defeat. Clarkie, what not doing?
Good. No, not good. Congratulations, Sri Lanka. Very well played. Produced pitches that were going to be tough for the Aussies because they were going to spin, but the Australian players would have known what they were in for before they even got there. I think Sri Lanka picked 4 spinners. As I said earlier, I'm a little surprised why Finchie wanted to bat second in those conditions. But once again, no 100 in the one-day series. Davey Warner got close with a 99. Guys getting starts. Our middle order struggled. Man, yeah, they're going to cop a bit of heat, that's for sure, because I don't care what conditions you're playing, we should be beating Sri Lanka. We're a better team than that. So, yeah, we got to quickly turn things around, because I would imagine the test matches, they're going to produce the same pitches. They're going to turn square.
Jamie Rogers, morning to you.
Yeah, good morning, guys, and good morning to all of our listeners. I was just watching a video, actually, of Clay Thompson during the celebration parade. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but he sort of walking along and he trips. You know when you sort of trip and you try and regain yourself, but you sort of almost run in a way, and he's just bowled over a spectator there, and everyone's laughing and helping her up. But anyway, and Clay Thompson also, boys, loves cold water swimming in the ocean. I saw. So he's an Aquarius and said that the water he thinks is what's helped heal his body. And he said it's the best way to be part of nature is when you're icy cold in the ocean looking up at the sky. So there you go.
Well,
a man of after my own heart.
We're all different. Mine's on a boat looking at him in the water. Or yes. You in the water, Jamie.
Yes, exactly. You can watch us from afar.
I'm happy to support and cheer, but it's a little cold and the sharks. Not a good combo for me.
You just need to get a shark band, Clarkie, and then that'll all be gone.
Well, they're safe even for your body. Like, again, we were told that when we were playing, that anything in the salt water is great for recovery. Again, the colder the better, but even getting in the ocean. And you see a lot of sporting teams now, still, the morning after a game, they head to the beach and get in the salt water. So you can understand why, you know, why athletes know or hear. It's just, it's great for recovery. That's why so many of them do it.
Well, speaking of athletes, guys, Lauren Jackson is making a comeback 9 years after retiring from international basketball. She's been named on the Opal squad ahead of next year's Women's World Cup in Sydney. Now, she isn't guaranteed a spot in the side, but she's worked so hard, having returned to the NBL1 level for Albury Wodonga. She's averaging 32 points, 11 rebounds, and it's just such an unbelievable story. And even she said she never expected to get to this point and said she feels like a kid again vying for a position. And she said she's having to get into that frame of mind again of competing to wear the green and gold. And she is such a goat of women's basketball. 7-time MVP, 7-time champion across WNBA and WNBL, 4-time Olympic gold medalist. So her leadership, no doubt, will be so well received going into the squad, especially off the back of what's happened with the Liz Cambage saga. It will be great to see someone like her back representing Australia.
And JR, with the Collingwood Jordan Dugowie situation, I can't help but feel like the club was caught completely between a rock and a hard place here. So what punishment did they hand out?
Yeah, so Collingwood have given him a $25,000 suspended fine until the end of this season. So it means he won't have to pay a cent if he can just stay out of trouble. And they've called his actions in Bali disrespectful towards women. And the lady that is at the centre of all this did come out straight after, basically to question why there was such outrage and she wasn't offended. But he is already involved in a counselling program with a club psychologist off the back of his New York issue. But he's going to have further education on his behaviour. He also said in a press release that he was diagnosed with ADHD last year, and as he's just sort of trying to come to terms with managing that. But also on Collingwood, guys, we mentioned it yesterday, those youngsters, Isaac Quaynor and Jack McGinnivan, who had that TikTok video where they were rating women out of 10. So they came out yesterday and also apologised, and they've said that they've learnt from their mistake. They won't do it again. And it's about education on what to be posting on social media. So Collingwood hasn't fined those two. It's a tough one, boys, isn't it? Because Collingwood and the AFL definitely come out and say that they don't want to show any disrespect towards women. So then when your players are being seen to be doing that, it's, I don't know. I don't know if these boys should have been fined in some capacity or whether Collingwood said they, I don't know. I feel like something probably should have been more done a bit more just because of the stand that they have about not wanting to be disrespectful towards women. But social media and what's appropriate to be putting out there is a talking point amongst everyone. And I know in our household, we keep talking about it. And no doubt our listeners amongst their work colleagues and friends are probably all talking about it as well.
Great stuff, JR. Thanks so much. How are you, Dick?
Well, I'm good because I'm seeing the sun for the first time in about 7 months. So the summer has come like clockwork after the coldest, wettest spring I can ever remember in my 48 years here in Seattle. So it's glorious finally, and hopefully it'll stay that way for the next 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, well, I hope so for your sake. And the sun was certainly shining in, California there, in San Francisco and around the Bay Area as Golden State clinched a fourth title in 8 years last Friday, our time here in Australia. But what does this mean for the legacy of, this period in that franchise's history and also for Steph Curry?
I think it means more for Steph than it does for necessarily the Warriors, because I think the Warriors have already cemented themselves as the dynasty of the past decade in the NBA, despite LeBron's presence, threatening that. Obviously, LeBron bouncing around, you can't really have a dynasty if LeBron bounces around to different teams. But the Warriors had held that mantle as the best team over the last decade in the NBA. But what it did for Steph was it gave him a championship without Kevin Durant, which he had before, but really before it was the Splash Brothers, right? It was the threesome. It was Steph, Clay, Draymond Green. And while Draymond Green played a part in this championship, Clay had a few moments in this championship, this was Steph's championship, and he played at an MVP level the entire series, save one game where he couldn't hit a three, but the rest of the time, and particularly in that game four where he just went absolutely bananas, that was one of the all-time great performances. And I think that performance will live for a long, long time. We'll be talking about that individual performance in that game, and then also Steph's performance in this championship. That is going to last a long time. And Steph, I think, cemented himself as a top 10 player in the NBA by getting that championship.
Dick, the other thing as well that I don't think we talk enough about with great athletes is how tough they are. Again, you look at certain players and they might have aggression or they might be tough on the court or on the sporting field. But for me, any time a player can play for such a long period of time and stay at the top, they prove their toughness. And I think you just look through this final series. Again, there was talk after game one or game two that Steph's out with his foot injury. Don't tell me he wasn't uncomfortable or in pain or struggling with it, yet he still not only finds a way to show up, but still set the standard and compete the way he did.
Guys, I've been wrong a lot about NBA players, but I don't know about if I've been wrong more about anybody than I was about Steph Curry coming out of Davidson. I mean, a small school, small player, looked like he was 12 years old when he got drafted by the Golden State Warriors. He wore those baggy uniforms at Davidson, which made him look even smaller than he actually was. And, you know, I just thought, I was like, okay, he's going to be a nice role player that hits threes for some teams, but he'll get totally manhandled on the defensive end. But what I underestimated was Steph Curry's, like you mentioned, his durability and also his heart and his healthy cockiness. Everybody has to have a cockiness about him, but Steph has a healthy cockiness. It's not a Draymond Green in your face cockiness. It's kind of appealing, right? It's kind of appealing where You don't hear anything.
It's a strut. That's what it is.
Yeah,
it's a strut.
And,
yeah.
And you don't see anything until he buries the final nail in your coffin. Yeah. And then he does the little, I'm putting you to sleep. Or he points to his finger and there's my ring. Like, he saves it for the very end as the curtain goes down. It's just delivered so beautifully by Steph.
And what about the NBA draft coming up, Dick? Can anyone recruit well out of the draft and maybe push forward through the next season?
Well, it's going to be tough because those teams that are drafting at the top, they're truly bad basketball teams. I mean, that's why they're in the lottery, right? So they're a few years away. The Magic and the Thunder and the Rockets and the Kings, the Pistons, those teams are picking 1 through 5. They are a long way away from not only competing for a championship, but competing for even a playoff spot right now, as many of those teams were, you know, 10, 15 games out of playoff contention. I do like the top end of this draft. I don't see a bona fide superstar, but I do see 3 or 4 players that are going to be long time, you know, 10 to 15 year veterans in this league that maybe get to an all-star game or two. Jabari Smith from Auburn is projected to go number one. Chet Holmgren, who I saw a lot of at Gonzaga, obviously following those guys, you know, Chet's got to get bigger and stronger, but he has got kind of a European style game, guys. He's like, he's skinny and long, but he's got all the skills in the world, like you'd see from, one of those 6'11", you know, super thin guys that come over from Europe, like a Kristaps Porzingis, maybe with a better jump shot, is Chet Holmgren. And then Paolo Banchero is a guy that played his high school ball here in Seattle. And spurned my beloved Washington Huskies to go to Duke. How dare he? But that was probably the right call, as he was able to lead that Duke team into the NCAA Final Four. I think he's probably the most polished of all of them right now, you know, well-rounded of all of them right now. And, he's a guy that I think if Houston can get him at 3, which is where he's projected to go, I think that he could be a building block and really truly be a number one option on a very good team in just a few years. I like Jaden Ivey as well from Purdue. He's kind of a Ja Morant type guy, super athletic. He's got good range. He built that Purdue team into a formidable force over the last couple years. So Benedict Mathurin from Arizona, another point guard. That can also play off guard, big kid, a big strong guard that's athletic and a good leader. So there's some guys at the top of that draft that I think we're going to see some good depth in this draft, where we're not going to have a lot of busts, but I don't think we're necessarily – you don't have LeBron James in this draft. You don't have, you know, Kevin Durant in this draft. You don't have – I don't think you have an all-time NBA player in this draft.
Jabari Smith, $1.65 favorite with Tab to go number one. There's markets open there on the app. Now, Dick, in the NFL news overnight that Rob Gronkowski's retiring for a second time. What does this mean for Tom Brady and also the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
Well, I'm sure that Rob and Tom Brady, as good a relationship as they have, I mean, I'm sure that this was discussed numerous times before this announcement was mentioned or was made, rather. And I guess it's the second time for Rob. I don't know if he ever officially announce retirement the first time, or did he kind of sort of allude to retiring? I don't even remember, before he went to Tampa Bay, there seemed to be talk about retirement with Rob Gronkowski. But, you know, he goes down in history, guys, as a top 3 or 4 tight end in the history of the league, and certainly as probably the winningest tight end in the history of the league, not only being with Brady in Tampa Bay, but certainly all his years in New England. But he's right up there with the Kellen Winslows and the Tony Gonzalez and, now the Travis Kelce's that are going through right now. I mean, everybody will mention Rob Gronkowski in the breath of the greatest tight ends ever to play the game, even if he didn't necessarily have all the numbers, because he was banged up quite a bit, and so he missed quite a few games with injuries. But just as far as individual dominance at that position, there wasn't anybody that could guard Rob Gronkowski when he was at his best.
And finally, in golf, I see that Brooks Koepka and also Abraham Anser have now left to go to the LIV Tour. So how is the PGA Tour responding at the moment? I see they're going to talk about increasing the prize purses.
So what the PGA Tour is doing, which I think is interesting, because just the PGA Tour, really slapped the LIV as Jay Monahan dismissed the LIV Tour as exhibitions, right? Well, what is the PGA Tour doing now? They're putting 8 exhibitions out there where they pay guys money without even having to make a cut. So that's a little bit ironic that that he's doing that. What they're doing is they're going to have 8 tournaments beginning next year that are going to be sprinkled throughout the year that are, I guess, they kind of seem like World Golf Championship type events where there's no cut, except they have a massive purse. I mean, a $20 million purse for these tournaments. You're talking, if I'm doing the math right, I mean, that seems to be about, what, $4 or $5 million for first place for these tournaments that they're going to sprinkle around to try to entice these guys to stay in the PGA Tour. It's really been distasteful on both sides. As a huge golf fan, I don't like the way that it's gone. And yet I can't really blame guys like Brooks Koepka for taking what I can imagine will be hundreds of millions of dollars. If they were offering DJ 125 or 150 and Phil 200, I can imagine that Brooks, you know, his Q rating's right there with DJ. So I imagine he's in the triple digits of hundreds of millions of dollars to go to this tour.
Yeah, sadly, I know what I'd be doing. Going straight to Vegas. good on you, Dick. Thanks so much.
See you, boys. Talk to you next week.
Adam Pengilly, good morning.
Morning, Jared. Morning, boys.
All right, well, you're off to the Tats Tiara. This is the last Group 1 of the season, isn't it, this weekend? The barrier draw yesterday, Ena Visto is the $4 favourite with Tab, and we'll start from gate 8 if the emergencies come out, so a middle draw. What did you make of it?
Yeah, fairly even field, Jared, as we usually expect for a Tats Tiara. These fillies and mares, there's not a lot to separate them year in, year out when we get to the final Group 1 of the season. The Victorians will be strong, obviously, no doubt. Ena Visto with that barrier 8, once the emergencies come out, will obviously be heavily favoured to win a Group 1. And Snap Dancer was a big story out of the barrier draw yesterday, drawing barrier 21 to barrier 16 when the emergencies come out. So she'll have the outside gate after winning the Robert Sangster. I want to follow Nudge, Jared. I like this mare. She's obviously a bit of a hit and miss sometimes, given her racing pattern, but she loves the dry tracks up there in Queensland. I know she's drawn an awkward gate, but it's probably not going to be too much against her pattern settling in the second half of the field. So she's a horse I want to follow into this race on the weekend, but no doubt the Victorians will be extremely hard to topple.
What's this new race in Queensland, Adam?
King of the Mountain, Clarkie.
King of the Mountain. Bring that on.
New Year's Eve at Toowoomba, Clarkie. That's your New Year's Eve sorted.
Can't do it this year. Pretty unfortunately.
Wild, a chance? No, can't be pretty wild. It's going to be only restricted to Queensland trained horses.
Okay.
Up there in Queensland bred horses as well. So they've shut the borders up there, haven't they? They've circled the wagon and said, nah, we'll have the Queenslands up here. So $750,000, boys. It's going to be running to Toowoomba on New Year's Eve. These slots races are all the rage at the moment, aren't they? Obviously, with the Everest starting several years ago. Now they've got the Archer up there at Rocky. And now the King of the Mountain at Toowoomba. So we'll see how it plays out. But no doubt the likes of Tony Golan, Robert Heathcote, Desley Foster are all licking their lips. They won't have any interstate competition coming up for that race.
What's next for Classique Legend, mate?
Yeah, D-Day Loz is coming up pretty soon. Les Bridges said in terms of his spring preparation, he's obviously on the comeback trail from that suspensory ligament. He's slowly getting back into some lighter work and trying to build him up and try and keep him together. So Les said a decision's probably going to be made in the next month or so, I'd imagine, about where he's going to push on towards the spring and try and get him in the Everest or wait for the autumn and target the TJ Smith Stakes. So the big boy's been off the scene for a fairly long time now. It's obviously hard to try and get him back and hold him together after all the problems he's had in his career, but it'd be great to see him back heading towards some of the major spring sprint races later this year.
And Canterbury today, have you got anything for us?
Yeah, I do, Jared. Race 2, number 6, Maritima. She was great on debut, I thought, at Canterbury. They didn't have a whole lot of luck in the straight. Yep, I'd like to see her jump and settle a little bit closer in the run today. She's a little bit slow out of the gates there, but I think she can improve naturally second up today. And Chris Waller, we know at this time of year, he's late maturing two-year-olds heading towards their three-year-old seasons usually fire. So she's the way I want to play Canterbury today. Race 2, number 6, Maritima.
And that's $3.80 and favourite with Tab. Have a great day, mate.
See you, boys.